Enderman, at least. Further Enderman. Huh? Two candles outside Vidyapit classroom. Huh? Group, both of you together. Yes. We took first over you for that batch. I told them, give a feedback, whether to continue or discontinue after this session. This is over your class will be. You have to process the data very fast. I took one garland now, second garland.
From our batch.
Yeah, from your batch. आप पहन लो अभी ये उनको दे दो ये फर्स्ट बेस्ट क्लास भी अटेंड किया ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय सो नाइन्थ कैंटो सेवेंथ चैप्टर डिसेंडेंट्स ऑफ किंग मांधाता विच यू आर सपोज टू कंप्लीट यस्टरडे वी आर बिगिनिंग टुडे श्री सुख उवाच मांधातु पुत्र पर्व परवो योम्बरीश प्रकीर्तित पितामहेन प्रवृतो युवनाश्वस्तु यत्तत्सुतः हारीतस्तस्य पुत्रोऽभून् मान्धातुर्प्रवरा इमे
Sukhdev Goswami said, the topmost prominent among the sons of Mandata was he who is celebrated as Ambarisha. Ambarisha was accepted as a son by his grandfather, Yuvanashva. Ambarisha's son was Yuvanashva and Yuvanashva's son was Harita. In Mandata's dynasty, Ambarisha, Harita and Yuvanashva were very prominent.
So, Yuvanashva and Harita. So Mandhata's dynasty is continuing here. So in this chapter, we have three prominent stories. One story is about Purukutsa, very short. So Purukutsa, and second story is about Trishanku, then third story is about Harishchandra. So we'll discuss this here only. Second verse. If you have any. Fear from snakes, you hear from second to third and fourth verse. Okay. Narmada Bhatrubhir Datta Purukutsaya Yoragaihi Tayarasatalam Nilo Bhugajendro Prayuktaya.
The serpent brothers of Narmada gave Narmada to Purukusta. Being sent by Vasuki, she took Purukusta to the lower regions of the universe.
So Narmada was given to Purukusta. And Narmada took Purukutsa to lower region of universe. Okay. Rasatal. Purukutsa is the son of Mandhata, right? Purukutsa is son of Mandhata. You go to verse number, where does Mandhata's verse number 38. He has two brothers and 50 sisters, right? Where is it? 38. Purukutsa, Ambarisha and Muchukunda. These three were the sons of Mandhata. This Ambarisha is different. Yesterday I said that. Okay, second verse is over. Third verse. Gandharvan avadhit tatra vidhyanvai vishnu shakti dhruk nagalabdhavara sharpad abhayam smaratam idam.
There in Rasatal, the lower regions of the universe, Purukutsa, being empowered by Lord Vishnu, was able to kill all the Gandharvas who deserved to be killed. Purukutsa received the benedictions from the serpents that anyone who remembers this history of his being brought by Narmada to the lower region of the universe will be assured of safety from the attacks of snakes.
Okay. Very small story. Oh, you only read that. So Purukutsa was married to Narmada. Narmada took him to Rasatal. There he killed some Gandharvas. Yes, if you remember this much, na, you will be relieved from snakes' fear. So the son of Purukutsa was Trasadasyu, who was the father of Anaranya. Then Anaranya's son was Haryashva, the father of Praruna. Praruna was the father of Trinabindhu. Okay, so we came till Trinabindhu. From Purukutsa to Trinabindhu, Tribandhana. So Tribandha's son will be Trishanku. That is in the next verse. The son of Tribandha was Satyavrata, who is celebrated by the name Trishanku. Because he kidnapped the daughter of a Brahmana when she was being married, his father cursed him to become a Chandala, lower than a Shudra. Thereafter, by the influence of Vishwamitra, he was sent to higher planetary system, the heavenly planets, in his material body. But because of the prowess of demigods, he fell back downward. Nonetheless, by the power of Vishwamitra, he did not fall all the way down. Even today, you can see him hanging in the sky, head downward. That is Trishanku. Trishanku. So son of Tribandhana was Trishanku. His name was Satyavrata, but he committed three mistakes. He had faults caused suffering like three nails. That's why he is Trishanku. He committed three mistakes. What are the three mistakes? First, he displeased his father. Okay, one Brahmana girl is getting married, he went and stole that girl. Okay, he stole the bride of a Brahmana who was being married. So father displeased. He said, "You cursed." Okay, he cursed. You become a Chandala. Then second mistake he did was, he killed the milking cow of his guru. Third mistake, he enjoyed some unsanctified items. So because of these three mistakes, he was called Trishanku. And he went to Vishwamitra and said, "I want to go to heavenly planets. Please send me there." He said, "Okay, go. I have mystic power. I will send you." He sent him. And he said, "You have no qualification. You can't come to heavenly planets. Get down." So he was falling down. He said, "I sent him up. How can he fall down? He will not fall down. He will hang there only." So with his mystic powers, he did not allow him to fall down. And some people also say that he created a heaven for Trishanku there. Trishanku Swarga. He says, Vishwamitra created Trishanku Swarga. They say, I don't know, Bhagavatam, in that purpose I didn't find it. Okay, Trishanku's son is Harishchandra. So the rest of the chapter is Harishchandra's story. Please read, Prabhu, translation.
The son of Trishanku was Harishchandra. Because of Harishchandra, there was a quarrel between Vishwamitra and Vasishtha, who for many years fought one another, having been transformed into birds. Harishchandra had no son and was therefore extremely morose. Once therefore, following the advice of Narada, he took shelter of Varuna and said to him, "My lord, I have no son. Would you kindly give me one?" O King Parikshit.
One minute. Seventh purport we'll discuss. So Trishanku's son is Harishchandra. So because of him, there is a quarrel between Vishwamitra and Vasishtha. And they fought by becoming birds. So the story was, Vishwamitra was actually a Kshatriya. And he underwent very severe austerities because he wanted to become a Brahmana. So you know this story from Ramayana. So Vishwamitra goes to Vasishtha's ashram and then he asks for Kamadhenu cow and he would not give. And then he demands, right? And then because of the army coming out of that cow only, so Vishwamitra's army was defeated. He said, oh, Brahmanas are so powerful, I will become a Brahmana. He was a Kshatriya, he wanted to become a Brahmana. So he tries and then he becomes Brahmarshi eventually. And in his tapasya, he was distracted by, Menaka, then Rambha, like that. Once by anger, once by lust. So it's a long story. So later, Vasishtha finally accepted him as a Brahmana. Okay. Then first, Brahma comes and says, okay, you are Brahmarshi. Then he says, no, you make Vasishtha accept me. He should come and accept that I am Brahmarshi. Okay, fine. Vasishtha, Brahma brings Vasishtha and then Vishwamitra accepts him as Brahmana. Vasishtha accepts Vishwamitra as Brahmana. So, here what happened was, Harishchandra did a Rajasuya sacrifice. Then Vishwamitra, he took away all his possessions as Dakshina. You give me Dakshina. What? Your whole, whatever you have, you just give me as Dakshina. He just took away everything. But Vasishtha did not like this. Vasishtha said, how can you accept everything as Dakshina only? So, come and fight with me. So they started fighting with each other. So in that fight, they cursed each other to become birds. You become bird. And as birds also, they started fighting. Right? Prabhupada says, this is the nature of this material world. So such a great mystic yogi as Saubari Muni, he became victim to sense gratification. Then such great sages like Vasishtha and Vishwamitra, they became birds. So this is the nature of this material world. Ah, Brahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravartino Arjuna. So within this material world, however elevated one may be in material qualities, one must suffer the conditions of birth, death, old age, disease. Padam padam yadvipadam. So the role of Krishna consciousness movement is to give human being an opportunity to chant Hare Krishna, and that's a great benediction for the human society. And he will go out of this material world like that. So now that is about one activity of Harishchandra, who became somehow the cause of quarrel between Vasishtha and Vishwamitra. And second, Harishchandra did not have a son. So he wanted a son. He went to the demigod Varuna. I want a benediction. What? I want a son. If you give me a son, I will do a sacrifice with that son only. I will sacrifice a son for you. You give me the son, I will sacrifice him only for you. And then what is the point asking? I don't know. But that's how he says. So with that son, I shall perform a sacrifice for your satisfaction. He says like that. Then Varuna says, okay, take the son. He gives the son. Then Harishchandra develops affection for that son. He says, Varuna comes and asks, oh, I gave you son, now do the sacrifice. Then Harishchandra says, after 10 days I will do the sacrifice. Varuna waits for 10 days. Then Harishchandra says, after the baby develops teeth, after the teeth are grown, then I will do sacrifice. Now it's not the right time. We should not sacrifice a toothless baby. He says like that. Then Varuna waits. Then Varuna comes back again after the teeth grew. Then Harishchandra says, after the teeth have fallen down, then I will do sacrifice. Not old age. So teeth will fall down and the new teeth will come for children. So then I will do sacrifice. Then Varuna waits. Then he comes after some time. After the teeth grew again, then our Harishchandra comes. Harishchandra says, teeth have fallen now. After the teeth grow again, then I will do the sacrifice. Then Varuna waits. The next time when Varuna comes, he says, when he becomes a Kshatriya and able to fight, so then I will sacrifice him. So that is the right point of doing sacrifice. So our Harishchandra waits. Varuna waits. So now Rohit, now he is becoming older, right? So he was not a child, now he is growing. Then he understands that my father is going to sacrifice me for Varuna. So he runs away. So then because Harishchandra could not perform that sacrifice, so Harishchandra developed a disease called dorpsy. dropsy. Dropsy means like stomach will become very big and some suffering is there. He develops dropsy. So now Rohit is out of station. He is out of sight. Then Varuna is waiting there and Harishchandra is suffering here. Then after every 1 year, Rohit would try to come back to the kingdom to see the father. Then Indra will come in the form of an old Brahmana and then says, don't go. Okay, he tells some reason and says, don't go to Harishchandra now. Then Rohit goes back. Second year, after one more year, Rohit tries to come back. Then Indra will come again in the form of old Brahmana and says, don't go. So like that 6 years passed. Right? So 6 years, Harishchandra was suffering dropsy. Then Rohit, after 6 years, he goes to one person and then buys a person. His name is Sunashepa. He buys that person, purchases him, and then brings him to his father and says, you sacrifice him, not me. Instead of me, you sacrifice him. Then Harishchandra performs that sacrifice. That is the story of Harishchandra. So please read the translations.
O King Parikshit, Harishchandra begged Varuna, my lord, if a son is born to me, with that son I shall perform a sacrifice for your satisfaction. When Harishchandra said this, Varuna replied, let it be so. Because of Varuna's benediction, Harishchandra begot a son named Rohit. Thereafter, when the child was born, Varuna approached Harishchandra and said, now you have a son. With this son, you can offer me a sacrifice. In answer to this, Harishchandra said, after 10 days have passed since the animal's birth, the animal becomes fit to be sacrificed. After 10 days, Varuna came again and said to Harishchandra, now you can perform the sacrifice. Harishchandra replied, when an animal grows teeth, then it becomes pure enough to be sacrificed. When the teeth grew, Varuna came and said to Harishchandra, now the animal has grown teeth and you can perform the sacrifice. Harishchandra replied, when all its teeth have fallen out, then it will be fit for sacrifice. When the teeth had fallen out, Varuna returned and said to Harishchandra, now the animal's teeth have fallen out and you can perform the sacrifice. But Harishchandra replied, when the animal's teeth grow in again, then he will be pure enough to be sacrificed. When the teeth grew in again, Varuna came and said to Harishchandra, now you can perform the sacrifice. But Harishchandra then said, O King, when the sacrificial animal becomes a Kshatriya and is able to shield himself to fight with the enemy, then he will be purified. Harishchandra was certainly very much attached to his son. Because of this affection, he asked the demigod Varuna to wait. Thus Varuna waited and waited for a time to come. Rohit could understand that his father intended to offer him as the animal for sacrifice. Therefore, just to save himself from death, he equipped himself with bow and arrows and went to the forest. When Rohit heard that his father had been attacked by dropsy due to Varuna and that his abdomen had grown very large, he wanted to return to the capital, but King Indra forbade him to do so. King Indra advised Rohit to travel to different pilgrimage sites and holy places, for such activities are pious indeed. Following this instruction, Rohit went to the forest for 1 year. In this way, at the end of the second, third, fourth, and fifth years, when Rohit wanted to return to his capital, the king of heaven, Indra, approached him as an old Brahmana and forbade him to return, repeating the same words as in the previous year. Thereafter, in the sixth year, after wandering in the forest, Rohit returned to the capital of his father. He purchased from Ajikrata his second son named Sunashepa. Then he offered Sunashepa to his father Harishchandra to be used as the sacrificial animal and offered Harishchandra his respectful obeisances. Thereafter, the famous king Harishchandra, one of the exalted persons in history, performed grand sacrifices by sacrificing a man and pleased all the demigods. In this way, his dropsy created by Varuna was cured.
So, in one of the purports, Prabhupada writes that animal sacrifice and slave trade existed since time immemorial. Yes, Prabhu.
In that great human sacrifice, Vishwamitra was the chief priest to offer oblations. The perfectly self-realized Jamadagni had the responsibility for chanting the mantras from the Yajurveda. Vasishta was the chief Brahminical priest, and sage Ayasya was a reciter of the hymns of the Samaved. King Indra, being very pleased with Harishchandra, offered him a gift of a golden chariot. Shunashepa's glories will be presented along with the description of the son of Vishwamitra.
So, in the ninth canto, in the some later chapters, this Shunashepa's story will come again. So here, he will be Harishchandra performed a sacrifice, but Vishwamitra accepts that Shunashepa, right, as his own son. He had some 100 sons, and then 50 sons agree him. 50 sons will not agree that Shunashepa can become their brother. He was just purchased like a slave from Ajigartha, so they did not accept. So Vishwamitra curses 50 sons, and other 50 sons, they are like obedient to the father. They were blessed that they can have good children like that. So this story will come in the later part of ninth canto. Okay. He was not killed. He was accepted as son of Vishwamitra. That details are there. So Yamadagni. Okay. Now Harishchandra performs the sacrifice and his dropsy is cured. Then Harishchandra gets a spiritual knowledge from Vishwamitra. Vishwamitra gave imperishable knowledge to Harishchandra and his wife, seeing their truthfulness, forbearance, and concern for essence. So Harishchandra established his spiritual knowledge and completely freed from material bondage. And Prabhupada writes that spiritual knowledge is realization of one's self as part of Supreme Lord. When self-realized spiritual soul is engaged in service to the Lord, he is eternally imperceptible and inconceivable. Okay, that's how that chapter ends, with the stories of Purukutsa, Trishanku and Harishchandra. Now, 9.8. Sri Shuka Uvacha Harito Rohita Sutas Sutas Champastasmad Vinirmita Champapuri Sudevoto Vijayo Yasya Jatmajaha. So the son of Rohita was Harita. So now Mandhata's dynasty we heard till Rohita. Harishchandra's son is Rohita. Dynasty is continuing. Rohita's son is Harita. His son is Champa. His son is Sudeva. His son is Vijaya. Then his son is Bharuka. Then Vrika. Then his son is Bahuka. So here Bahuka story is elaborately discussed from third verse to fourth verse. So I'll tell the story. So Bahuka's son was Sagara. So some enemies just usurped the possessions of Bahuka, and Bahuka entered Vanaprastha along with his wife. So what happened was, Bahuka became old and then he died, and his wife was pregnant. And she wanted to do sati. Although she was pregnant, she wanted to do sati. So then Aurumuni, he forbade Bahuka's wife, you don't do sati, because a child is in your womb, please don't do sati. Then, and that pregnant wife had some co-wives also. So co-wives became very envious of this pregnant lady, pregnant wife, and then they conspired and poisoned her. So no husband is not there, and one child is going to come from her. Then all the co-wives poisoned her. That is the nature of envy. Right, even before the child comes out of the womb, also one can develop that kind of feelings. So now what happened was, child was not killed. Child was born along with the poison. Sa gara. Sa means with, gara means poison. The child who was born is named Sagara, one who is born with poison. Yeah, please read third verse.
Bahuka died when he was old, and one of his wives wanted to die with him, following the sati rite. At that time, however, Aurva Muni, knowing her to be pregnant, forbade her to die.
So this is one important learning from her behavior. She, as a chaste wife, she naturally felt that I don't want to live anymore. Because my husband died, I don't want to live anymore. That was her natural feeling. But she was reminded of a service. Oh, you may want to die. You may want to express your emotion or your attachment to your husband. by doing sati sahagaman, but you should be responsible about your son also. A boy is, a child is growing in your womb. When Avramuni told that, so she understood. So she was not overwhelmed by her own emotions. She was conscious of the service also. She followed the good advice of spiritual master there. So when someone is overwhelmed by grief or happiness, generally they tend to neglect any suggestions. They are overwhelmed by their own emotions, right? So one may ignorantly think that I am just expressing my emotion. I am not affecting anyone. But it is considered very selfish to be overwhelmed with one's own emotions, especially when they are negative. You may think that I am not affecting anyone, but others will get affected, right? Once one IOS boy, he tried to commit suicide for some reasons. So, and somehow he was saved, and then Gauram Prabhu took him to Maharaj, Radhanath Maharaj, and said, Maharaj, this boy tried to do this, tried to commit suicide. So Maharaj told him, it is the most selfish act. Committing suicide is the most selfish act. Right? You may think that I am just ending my life, what is the problem with the other? No, it's like you are overwhelmed with your own emotions, your own ego or whatever. Right? So that is very condemned. So selfishness is not only that I want some possessions like that. Selfishness could also be seen in one's extreme eagerness to express one's own emotions. That also is selfishness. Even at the cost of damage to others or society, he wants to express his own emotion. He is feeling that urge inside deeply, right? He wants to express that emotion without being conscious of the service and how it is affecting others. But this lady was glorious in the sense that although she was feeling the deep urge to end her life because husband died, but still she was conscious of the service that I have to give birth to a child, so I will do it. So now towards such a lady, her co-wives developed envy and hatred. That is even more lamentable, right? Pathetic. So especially when the husband is not there, there is no more opportunity to have a child. Because we are not having children, why should she have children? So that is the envy that is exhibited by co-wives of Chitraketu's wife also, Krutadyuti also, like that. So the boy was born with Gara. His name is Sagara. And this Ganga Sagar, it was excavated by his sons. Okay. Knowing that she was pregnant, the co-wives of the wife of Bahuka conspired to give her poison with her food. But it did not act. Instead, the son was born along with the poison. Therefore, he became famous as Sagara, one who is born with poison. Sagara later became the emperor. The place known as Ganga Sagar was excavated by his sons. So now 5th and 6th verses describe the activities of Sagara Maharaj. Right? He reformed some uncivilized men. Please read.
Sagar Maharaj, following the order of his spiritual master, Aurava, did not kill the uncivilized men like the Talajangas, Yavanas, Shakas, Haihayas and Barbaras. Instead, some of them he made dress awkwardly, some of them he shaved clean but allowed to wear mustaches, some of them he left wearing loose hair, some he half-shaved, some he left without underwear and some without external garments. Thus, these different clans were made to dress differently, but King Sagara did not kill them.
Okay. They were uncivilized men. But he did not kill them, but he punished them, giving them different dressing styles, hairstyles, etc. under the direction of Aurava Muni. Then 7th verse describes how he did some Ashwamedha. Okay. And Indra stole the horse. So from there, the next whole episode of Ganga's descent, Bhagiratha and all that will come. Read the 7th verse.
Following the instructions of the great sage Aurava, Sagar Maharaj performed Ashwamedh sacrifices and thus satisfied the Supreme Lord, who is the Supreme Controller, the Supersoul of all learned scholars and a knower of all Vedic knowledge, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Indra, the king of heaven, stole the horse meant to be offered at the sacrifice.
Hmm.
King Sagara had two wives, Sumati and Keshini. The sons of Sumati, who were very proud of their prowess and influence, following the orders of their father, searched for the lost horse. While doing so, they dug into the earth very extensively.
Hmm. So, Sagara seems to be following Aurava Muni, spiritual master, very nicely. He told to reform uncivilized men, so he did that. He told to perform Ashwamedha, he did that. Like that. So now Sagara had two wives, Sumati and Keshini. And Sumati gave birth to 60,000 sons who were very proud. Right? They went to search the horse. So they dug extensively into the earth. And they reached Kapila's ashram. Right, they saw the horse near Kapila's ashram. So they thought that Kapila was the thief. Right? They shouted, "Kill him, kill him." Okay. As they approached Kapila opened his eyes. Right? And by Indra's influence, they lost their intelligence actually. Indra bewildered them there also. He stole the horse and he bewildered the people who came to search the horse. Right? By Indra's influence, they lost their intelligence. And they disrespected Kapila Muni. Right? They thought that Kapila was Indra. That's how Indra bewildered them. Okay. They know that Indra stole the horse, but they were saying that Kapila was the thief. Why? Because Indra bewildered them to think that Kapila was Indra. Right? So the result was they were burned to ashes. But the popular misunderstanding of this incident was Kapila opened his eyes and then he burned them to ashes. But it is not the case. So, because they disrespected a great personality, their attitude of disrespect burned them in the form of fire to ashes. Like that. Just an offensive thought about a great personality was sufficient to burn them to ashes. Okay, we'll hear more arguments in the future verses. Please read, Prabhu.
Thereafter, in the northeastern direction, they saw the horse near the ashram of Kapila Muni. "Here is the man who has stolen the horse," they said. "He is staying there with closed eyes. Certainly, he is very sinful. Kill him, kill him." Shouting like this, the sons of Sagara, 60,000 altogether, raised their weapons. When they approached the sage opened his eyes. By the influence of Indra, the king of heaven, the sons of Sagara had lost their intelligence and disrespected a great personality. Consequently, fire emanated from their own bodies and they were immediately burned to ashes.
They immediately burned to ashes. So Prabhupada speaks about insulting a great personality. So now material body is a combination of five elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether. So fire element is already there in the body. And that became so prominent that it burned them to ashes. So the fires increased the heat in the bodies of Sagara's sons, which burned them to ashes, was not because of the glance of Kapila Muni, but because of their misbehavior towards Kapila Muni. Right? Mahat Vyatikrama. Because of Mahat Vyatikrama. So the word comes in the 11th verse, third line. Mahat Vyatikrama Hata Bhasmasat Abhavan Kshanat. Bhasmasat Abhavan Kshanat. Immediately. Tat Kshanat. So there was no need for any external forces to punish an offender. The offense itself is sufficient to make their life miserable. End their life. Like that. So Sati also tells Daksha, so devotee may forgive, but dust of the lotus feet of devotee will not forgive. It will vanquish the offender. Right? So yesterday we discussed about some Vaishnavaparad points. Now, 12th verse. Nasadhu vado muniko ava bharjita. Nripendra putra iti sattva dhamani. Katham tamo roshamayam vibhavyate. Jagat pavitratmani khera jo bhuva.
It is sometimes argued that the sons of King Sagara were burned to ashes by the fire emanating from the eyes of Kapila Muni. This statement, however, is not approved by great learned persons. For Kapil Muni's body is completely in the mode of goodness and therefore cannot manifest the mode of ignorance in the form of anger. Just as the pure sky cannot be polluted by the dust of the earth.
This is a very important point in the explanation of the whole episode. Na sadhu vado munikopa bhurjita. Munikopa bhurjita. So, na sadhu vado. Sadhu vado means a glorious talk. Na sadhu vado means it's only a rumor. It's not a intelligent talk. It's not the talk of sadhus. What is the talk? Munikopa bhurjita. Because of the kopa, of the anger of Kapil Muni, they were burnt to ashes is not an acceptable fact. Right? Nupayandra putra iti sattvadhamani. Because Kapil Muni, being an incarnation of Supreme Personality of Godhead, his body is suddha sattva. Just by seeing it, one will become purified. How can anger, which is a mode of passion, right? How can that be exhibited by someone who is having a body of Shuddha Sattva? So Kapil Muni cannot exhibit any material anger like that. So one cannot underestimate the divinity of Lord's incarnation, that they are swayed away by the influence of anger like that. Avadayanantima moodha manushintani mashritam. Right? Like some say that Lord Ram ate meat. Some say that he committed suicide in Sarayu River. Some say that Krishna was killed by some hunter. It's all sheer stupidity to think that God is very ordinary. They apply so much logic to reject that Krishna or Ram are gods. They apply no logic to accept some ordinary mortal as God. Okay, they have absolutely no logic. Some Baba says, I am God, and they start worshipping him. What is your logic? No logic. Why are you rejecting Krishna? Because he danced with so many gopis. On that basis, can you reject Krishna? So like that. They use logic there. We don't use logic here. Like that. No, this Kapila is same. Same Kapila. Devahuti's son. Yasyerita shankhyamayi drihetanaur yayamukshus tarate Duratyayam Bhavarnavam Mrityupatham Vipaschita Paratma Bhutasya Katham Prithanmati.
Kapil Muni enunciated in this material world the Sankhya philosophy, which is a strong boat with which to cross over the ocean of nescience. Indeed, a person eager to cross the ocean of material world may take shelter of this philosophy. In such a greatly learned person situated on the elevated platform of transcendence, how can there be any distinction between enemy and friend?
No enemy and no friend. A devotee of Krishna, Prahlad Maharaj, he has no distinction between enemy and friend. He doesn't even like the idea of being discriminating people as enemy and friend. I know that Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead. Every living entity is part and parcel of Supreme Personality of Godhead. And everyone is servant of Krishna. So where is this concept of enemy and friend coming into picture? That was his question to his gurus. So, difference of intelligence is not mine, it's yours. Okay, you are thinking that it is, he is questioning Chanda and Amarka. You are thinking people in terms of friends and enemies. So how can Kapila discriminate people as enemies and friends? Like that. So Paratma Bhuta or Brahma Bhuta means always jubilant. Unaffected by false distinctions between good and bad in material world. Samas sarveshu bhuteshu. They have no enemy or friend. On the absolute platform, they are freed from material contamination. That is the import of Paratma Bhuta, as Prabhupada explains in the purport. So, here ends that Kapil Muni's episode. So we can also learn that because they had an offensive attitude towards Kapila, or they misunderstood Kapila, right? They minimized his position, so they were burnt to ashes. The offense itself, gave them the reaction. Okay, although the other person need not do anything to affect you. So some person offends a Vaishnava, And the Vaishnava is so forgiving, he is not affected at all. But the offense itself will give the reaction to that person. Similarly, in our dealings with other devotees, we need to see not to judge them. So if our judgment is wrong, just like they thought that he stole the horse, their judgment was wrong. Right? So if the judgment is wrong, then one will be affected by that offense. The best way is, even if we have to point out someone's fault, even if the faults are some very obvious that we have to do something about it. So when you are reporting to a senior authority or reporting in front of the deities, oh Supreme Lord, oh Vrindavan Bihari or Gopinath, so I am getting little disturbed or distracted by this kind of behavior of this person. So I perceive this discrepancies. I may be wrong. I am happy if I am wrong. Right? I will be extremely happy if I am wrong, if my perceptions are wrong. But please give me the right consciousness to see that Vaishnava in a proper perspective. Like that. So one should always give a benefit of doubt that one could be wrong also. Whatever I perceive is correct. Okay, I saw him doing that. He is third class. He is not like this. So we can't just go by that. Especially when we are making a negative observation, right? Observing something negative, we can always give a benefit of doubt that there could be some bona fide reason behind it. Right? If it is actually some wrong thing, then one may have to address, okay, through the medium of some superiors who are more responsible for that person, who can handle the situation in a much better way. But misjudging someone will always affect us. And we can always give a benefit of doubt that our judgment could be wrong also. Right? We should expect and we should desire that our misjudging others should be wrong. Like that. Ultimately, we should desire that my friend devotee, he should behave properly only. Right? The apparent misbehavior of him is wrong. I will be happy to hear that. That's what should be the expectation. Like that. Okay, 14th verse. So 14th verse continues the descendants of Sagara. Sagara's son is Asamanjasa. So Sagara had two wives. You remember? In the 8th verse, Sagara had Sumati and Keshini. Sumati's sons are 60,000. They were burnt to ashes. Now he had another wife, Keshini. So from Keshini, he got a son named Asamanjasa. And his son is, Asamanjasa's son is Anshuman. So he works for the good of the grandfather. So 15th verse till 18th verse describe the story of Asamanjasa. Yes, Prabhu, please read.
Among the sons of Sagar Maharaj was one named Asamanjasa, who was born from the king's second wife, Keshini. The son of Asamanjasa was known as Anshuman, and he was always engaged in working for the good of Sagar Maharaj's grandfather. Formerly, in his previous birth, Asamanjasa had been a great mystic yogi, but by bad association he had fallen from his exalted position. Now in this life he was born in a royal family and was a jati smara.
Mm.
That is, he had the special advantage of being able to remember his past birth.
Mm.
Nonetheless, he wanted to display himself as a miscreant. Mm. And therefore he would do things that were abominable in the eyes of the public and unfavorable to his relatives. He would disturb the boys sporting in the river Sarayu by throwing them into the depths of the water. Because Asamanjasa engaged in such abominable activities, his father gave up affection for him and had him exiled. Then Asamanjasa exhibited his mystic powers by reviving the boys and showing them the king and their parents. After this, Asamanjasa left Ayodhya.
You see, story of Asamanjasa, he was a great mystic yogi in his previous birth. Now he took birth as son of Sagara, and he misbehaved very voluntarily, right? Just to make a show that he is a miscreant, he behaved like that, and he was banished. Right? He was throwing children into the water, and then later he revived when he was about to go out. Then Sagara actually felt embarrassed and lamented, "I banished this person." So Ayodhyavasis also were very much astounded. We can see that in this ninth canto we read so many names, hundreds of names. It's difficult to remember also. We read so many names. In one of the purports, Prabhupada mentions that there are so many kings, right? I mean, nobody remembers their activities, their life, unless he is very prominent, if he is a devotee or if he is like great miscreants, something like that. But obscurity. Okay, they vanished into obscurity. So what is relevant for us from all this series of names is their small devotional activity that they do, the inspiration that they give us, right? Or the learning from their mistakes. Otherwise, however great one may be, they may be king or they may be princess or whatever, it's just mere list of names only. That's all. Soul is permanent, right? And this name is just a designation that he got in that birth. Right? This name or fame or his activities, they are all like relevant to that birth only. Here we see like the soul's journey is very nicely mentioned here, that he is a mystic yogi. Somehow he just fell down and took another birth, but he is continuing his activities, his spiritual activities. He is progressing on his spiritual path, right? Because of some mistake, he just became the son of Sagara and then he is continuing with that. So what is permanent is soul and his relationship with Krishna, and a soul who is conditioned in this material world and he wants to journey back towards Krishna. That is the main thread. And there being princes or kings or chandalas or sudras or cow hunters or brahmanas, they are all external. They are all temporary. They just appear and then they go like that. So however great deeds one may do, if they are devotional deeds, he will leave great inspiration for the future generations to come. If they are bad deeds, he will give so many lessons for the future generations to come by his bad example or good example. But ultimately his relationship with Krishna is the permanent thing. Baki sab, it's all temporary. Like that. Once Vrajadari Prabhu went to his home and then he was going through some of his old papers, of house papers, property papers. Okay, in that he saw that property, their house or some land that belonged to their family now. Earlier it was belonging to some other family. It was belonging to some other family, like that. So there some history of, maybe what, 100 years or whatever, that is mentioned. On this date, this person sold this land to this person. Then he sold this land to this person. In that legal papers, he was seeing all those details, right? So now, where are these persons now? They just remained as names in those history, in those legal papers. Nothing more than that. Nothing more relevant than that. So it's all like, however great a personality may be, he'll just remain as a mere name in the history. And sometimes those names also will be forgotten. Maybe probably, we see so many names, okay? People who lived at those times, they could connect to those names. For example, now movie industry is there, right? So many actors came. So in the beginning of, cinema, okay, so many actors came and actresses came. So now the newer generation, they can't relate at all to an actor who happened to be like very star on the screen 100 years back or 50 years back. They can't make any sense. Who is there now? What pleasure is he giving me now? So that is the thing. But if you see on the scale of eternity, it is all totally temporary. Okay, it doesn't make any relevance, okay, in a permanent sense on the scale of eternity. So like that. So now one important lesson we could learn is we need not be caught up by our day-to-day silly interactions or activities, right? We should always be seeing what is more permanent, right? So many things will happen and then pass away. But eternal, what is the underlying thread? What is my consciousness? Am I trying to come closer to Krishna? That is the more relevant part than small details that happen like that. Okay. Now we will see. Now Asamanjasa, that was his story, and then he left. He left Ayodhya. Then Anshuman. So Sagara's son is Asamanjasa. So Asamanjasa, somehow he lived, but he actually had a son. His name is Anshuman. So this Anshuman, he was serving the grandfather Sagara. Asamanjasa, he left. But Anshuman was very nicely assisting Sagara. So what was the assistance he needed? Sagara was performing a horse sacrifice, and then horse went away. Indra stole the horse, and all his 60,000 sons died, and one more son. So he misbehaved and in the garb of a miscreant. He was a great yogi and he left. So only he has only Anshuman to assist, his grandson. He was nicely assisting. So Anshuman ordered Sagara, ordered by Sagara to search the horse. So now Anshuman went. He reached their ashes. Then he found the horse also nearby, and he saw Kapildev and he offered prayers. So the prayers will be the rest of the chapter. So 19th verse, 18th verse, when all the inhabitants of Ayodhya, 19th verse, Anshuman, the grandson of Maharaj Sagara, was ordered by the king to search for the horse. Following the same path traversed by his uncles, Anshuman gradually reached the stack of ashes and found the horse nearby. The great Anshuman saw the sage named Kapila, the saint who is an incarnation of Vishnu, sitting there by the horse. Anshuman offered him respectful obeisances, folded his hands, and offered him prayers with great attention. Anshuman uvacha, napashyati tvam paramatmano jano, nabudhyate dhyapi samadhi yuktibhi, kutoparetasya manas shariradhi, Visarga Srishta Vayama Prakasha. So the theme of this verse is no one can know the Lord. Okay. Na Pashyati Tvam Paramatmano Jano. Someone read the translation.
Anshuman said, my Lord, even Lord Brahma is to this very day unable to understand your position, which is far beyond himself, either by meditation or by mental speculation. So what to speak of others like us who have been created by Brahma in various forms as demigods, animals, human beings, birds and beasts. We are completely in ignorance. Therefore, how can we know you who are the transcendence?
So napashyatitvam paramatmano jano. O Lord, your lordship is not understood by ajano. Ajano means Brahma. He is aja. He is sometimes called aja because he is not born of a mother. So he could not understand. Na buddhyate adhyapi samadhi yuktibhi. Although he is constantly immersed in his samadhi meditation on you, still he cannot understand you completely. Right? If Brahma cannot understand, kuto paretasya manasharirathi visarga srishta vayama prakasha. How can others understand you? They are in ignorance. They cannot understand. Either by meditation or mental speculation, one cannot understand Krishna. Even Brahma cannot understand. What to speak of others? So Anshuman is saying that because you are not understood even by Brahma, what to speak of my uncles? My uncles, 60,000 uncles, they came to see you, they could not understand you. That's why they misunderstood you. They were burnt to ashes. Show some mercy. It's difficult to understand you. Okay. So he said like that. So Ichcha Dvesha Samutvena. Every living entity is under the modes. They cannot understand the Lord. Why? Because Ichcha Dvesha Samutvena. All living entities in the material world are influenced by modes. Even Brahma is in the mode of goodness. Right? Mode of goodness is also conditioning. What is that? Sukha Sangena Badnati Jnana Sangena Chanagha Tatra Sattvam Nirmalatvat Prakashakam Anamayam. So demigod, mode of goodness is also conditioning. Demigods are in passion. Living entities less than demigods are in mode of ignorance and mixed modes, like that. So because of that, no one can understand you. Brahmaji says in second canto, that Purusha Sukta confirmed in that verse, in that chapter he says, Soham samam naya mayas tapo mayah ప్రజాపతీనాం అభివందితః పతి ఆస్థాయ యోగం నిపుణం సమాహితస్తం నాథ్యగత్యం యత ఆత్మసంభవః. సో ఐఎమ్ నోన్ యాజ్ ఎ గ్రేట్ బ్రహ్మాజీ, ఓకే, ఐఎమ్ పర్ఫెక్ట్ ఇన్ డిసిప్లిన్ సక్సెషన్ ఆఫ్ వేదిక్ విజ్డమ్, రైట్. ఐ హ్యావ్ అండర్ గోన్ సో మెనీ ఆస్టిరిటీస్. ఐఎమ్ ఎక్స్పర్ట్ ఇన్ మిస్టిక్ యోగా, రైట్. ప్రజాపతీనాం అభివందితః పతి, ఆల్ ది ప్రజాపతిస్, గ్రేట్ ప్రొజెనిటర్స్ ఆఫ్ మ్యాన్ కైండ్, మనూస్, దే కమ్ అండ్ ఆఫర్ ఒబేసెన్సెస్ అంట ఇన్ ఫ్రంట్ ఆఫ్ మీ, స్టిల్ తమ్నాథ్యగత్యం యత ఆత్మసంభవ, స్టిల్ ఐ కెనాట్ అండర్స్టాండ్ సుప్రీం లార్డ్, ద వెరీ సోర్స్ ఆఫ్ మై బర్త్, యత ఆత్మసంభవ, హీ ఈస్ ద సోర్స్ ఆఫ్ మై బర్త్, బట్ ఐ కెనాట్ అండర్స్టాండ్ హిమ్. బ్రహ్మాజీ సేస్ లైక్ దట్, రైట్. నమే విదు స్వరగణా ప్రభవం నమ హర్షయ అహం ఆదిర్హి దేవానాం హర్షీణాం చ సర్వసః. సో ఈవెన్ గ్రేట్ డెమిగాడ్స్, ఈవెన్ గ్రేట్ సేజెస్, దే కెనాట్ అండర్స్టాండ్ కృష్ణ. కృష్ణ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్ సేస్ దట్ యూ కెనాట్ అండర్స్టాండ్ మీ, రైట్. సో బట్ దట్ డజంట్ మీన్ దట్ వన్ నో వన్ కెన్ అండర్స్టాండ్ కృష్ణ ఎట్ ఆల్. నో వన్ కెన్ అండర్స్టాండ్ ఇఫ్ సుప్రీం లార్డ్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్ ఎన్లైటన్స్ ద సోల్. అథాపి తేదేవ పదాంబుజద్వయ ప్రసాద లేశానుగ్రహీత ఏవ హి జానాతి తత్వం భగవన్ మహిమ్నో నచాన్య ఏకోపి చిరం విచిన్వన్. సో ఇఫ్ వన్ గెట్స్ ఈవెన్ ఎ స్లైట్ ట్రేస్ ఆఫ్ లార్డ్స్ మెర్సీ ఆఫ్ హిస్ లోటస్ ఫీట్, దెన్ హీ కెన్ అండర్స్టాండ్ ద గ్రేట్నెస్ ఆఫ్ లార్డ్స్ పర్సనాలిటీ. దిస్ ఇస్ అ బ్యూటిఫుల్ ప్రేయర్ ఆఫర్డ్ బై ద డెమిగాడ్స్, నో బై బ్రహ్మాజీ ఇన్ ద 10th క్యాంటో. జానాతి తత్వం భగవన్ మహిమ్నో నచాన్య ఏకోపి చిరం విచిన్వన్. హీ విల్ నాట్ బి ఏబుల్ టు అండర్స్టాండ్ కృష్ణ జస్ట్ బై కంటిన్యూయింగ్ హిజ్ సిస్టమేటిక్ వేదిక్ స్టడీ ఫర్ సో మెనీ ఇయర్స్, రైట్. బై బికమింగ్ స్కాలర్ వై కెన్ నాట్ అండర్స్టాండ్ కృష్ణ, బట్ వన్ హ్యాస్ టు రిసీవ్ మెర్సీ. సో సుప్రీం పర్సనాలిటీ ఆఫ్ గాడ్ హెడ్ కెన్ బి అండర్స్టూడ్ బై వన్ హూ ఈస్ ఫేవర్డ్ బై ద లార్డ్, హీ కెనాట్ బి అండర్స్టూడ్ బై అదర్స్, లైక్ దట్. 22nd వర్స్. ఏ దేహ భాజస్ త్రిగుణ ప్రధాన గుణాన్ విపశ్యంత్యుతవ తమశ్చ యన్మాయయా మోహిత చేతసస్త్వం విదుస్వ సంస్థం నబహి ప్రకాశః.
మై లార్డ్, యు ఆర్ ఫుల్లీ సిట్యుయేటెడ్ ఇన్ ఎవ్రీవన్స్ హార్ట్, but the living entity is covered by the material body cannot see you, for they are influenced by the external energy conducted by the three modes of material nature. The intelligence being covered by sattva guna, rajagun, tamogun, they can see only the actions and reactions of these three modes of material nature. Because of the actions and reactions of the modes of ignorance, whether the living entities are awake or sleeping, they can see only the workings of material nature. They cannot see your lordship.
So living entities cannot see you, although Krishna is directly in the heart of the living entity, they cannot see him. What they see is only the actions and reactions of the modes, right? They are entrapped there. You see, sometimes in shops or showrooms there is some glass, glass doors or glass windows. So the person who is standing outside cannot see what's going on inside, but the fellow sitting inside can see everything outside very clearly. Outside fellow will see it as a mirror or something like that. He will come there and then he will take care of his hairstyle or do some other things, but inside fellow is laughing. Right? So like that, same thing with Krishna. Krishna can see each and every bit of our activity, right? He has record of every second of what we do, right? We think that he is not observing us because modes are covering us, because we can't see him, right? We don't believe that he is seeing us. So on this side we will do all golmaal, and from inside he will observe us. So, like that same thing he is mentioning here. What we see is actions of modes only. Just like the person who is standing outside the shop, he was seeing only the mirror. Okay, actions of mirror. What is that? Reflecting him. The mirror sometimes shows him beautiful, sometimes doesn't show him beautiful because of lightings or whatever. Okay, he appears very dark or he appears very fair because of the lightings, sunlight or whatever. He sees only that. Actions of modes. Right? He is entrapped in that actions of modes. He thinks that is reality. But from inside the glass, Lord is observing. that he is not aware. Now, in the 21st verse, Anshuman said, no one can know you. Prabhupada writes in the purport, how to know him. In the 22nd verse, Anshuman said, no one can see you. Prabhupada says, how to see him? How to see the Lord? How to see the Lord? Unless one is situated in transcendental loving service, one is unable to understand the Lord. So, how to know the Lord? We see in the first canto, we have studied in the third chapter, how to understand the Lord. Saveda dhatum padavim parasya duranta virasya rathangapane yo amayaya santataya anuvrityya bhajeta tatpada sarojagandham. A beautiful verse. This tells us how to understand the Lord. Yo amayaya, without any reservation, santataya, constantly, anuvrityya. Anuvrityya means following malleably, and the exact word that Prabhupada uses there is 1.3.38 or 36 somewhere. Santataya anuvrittya bhajeta tatpada sarojagandham. One should worship the Supreme Lord's lotus feet in that way. Then he can understand. So one must purify himself internally and externally. Apavitra pavutra va sarravasthangatopiya yasmaret pundarikaksham. And external cleanliness is what? Bathing 3 times daily. Internal cleanliness is cleaning the heart by chanting Hare Krishna. What is that? So you got that? Anuvrittya. Favorably. Right? Favorably. Anuvrittya means favorable service. So Krishna consciousness movement members must always follow this principle. Bahyabhyantara suchihi. Then it will one day be possible to see the Lord face to face. One day it will be possible. So, so it's difficult to see the Lord. Even Dwarkavasis say, Aho sanatha bhavadasma yadvayam traivishtapanam abidora darshanam premasmita snigdhan irikshananam pasyema rupam tava sarva saubhagam. So it is very difficult even for great demigods also to see you. Traivishtapanam api duradarshanam. They will have only durdarshan. They can't come and see you face to face. Right? If that is the case with demigods, what to speak of some ordinary earthly beings? But if he is a devotee, he can surpass all of them and see the Lord. Like that. Ultimately, it's Lord's mercy to give us darshan. But we must faithfully endeavor to see the Lord also. Like that. Sometimes, Lord is more merciful to devotees to whom he doesn't give darshan. Right? Narad Muni. Premati bhara nirbhinna pulakango, that first canto, 6th chapter. So Narad Muni was trying to see the Lord. Right? He saw the Lord in the meditation and Lord just escapes from his vision. And he was searching Lord here and there. But Lord comes and says, no more darshans in this life. But next life we will meet. Right? People who are not complete in their austerities and they are not freed from material taints, they cannot see you. They cannot see me face to face. So I will not give you any more darshan. He said like that. And Lord also says that this is to increase your intensity of desire to see me. That's why I just gave you a preview and then I'm just going back. Like that. So Narada Muni, then Vrajavasis, then Prachetas. So Prachetas, they were in the water. And for 10,000 years, they were in the water and then they were doing nice austerities. Then Lord comes. I don't know whether he gave even 10 minutes darshan. He sees the prachetas and then they offer prayers and then Lord gives them benediction. You marry Marisha and then he leaves immediately. There, Sukadeva Goswami writes, Lord is Sharanyavatsala. Maitreya Muni says, Lord is Sharanyavatsala. In the same verse where he mentioned that Lord just left, although Prachetas were so eager to see the Lord, they were not at all satisfied by the darshan of the Lord. Still, Lord left. And he is Saranavatsala. Why is he described as Saranavatsala? Because he kept these devotees in separation, Prachetas in separation from him, okay, and increased their longing for him. And then he went away to give darshan to someone else. Like that's why he is Saranavatsala. Sometimes Lord doesn't give darshan and shows more favor. Sometimes although he gives darshan to some people, he is not merciful to them. For example, demons, Duryodhan, he also got darshan of Krishna. But he never knew. Durvasa, who else? Daksha, 6.4. Hamsaguhya prayers. 6.4, he gets Lord's darshan. 6.5, he offends his devotee. Right? What is the use of that darshan? So we can't understand the dynamics of Lord's mercy logically. When will he give darshan? When will he not give darshan? All we could do is follow his instructions to the best of our capacity and serve him and be satisfied with whatever position he keeps us in. That way. Okay? Tam tvam aham jnana ghanam svabhava pradhvastamaya gunabheda mohaihi sanandanadyair munibhir vibhavyam katham vimodha paribhavayami.
O my Lord, sages freed from the influence of the three modes of material nature, sages such as the four Kumaras, Sanak, Sanatan, Sanandan, Sanatan, are able to think of you, who are concentrated knowledge. But how can an ignorant person like me think of you?
So sages can think of you. First he said we cannot understand you. 21. 22 he said we cannot see you. 23 he said we cannot think of you. Remembrance. Right? So sages who are freed from modes can think of you, but we cannot think of you. Ignorant people like me cannot think of you. So svabhava means one's own spiritual nature or original constitutional position. So tam tvam aham jnana ghanam svabhava pradhvasta maya gunabheda mohaihi. So one who is freed of material influence and who is very knowledgeable about Lord's glories and all, so they can focus on the Lord. Sanandanadyair means four kumaras, etc. Munibhir vibhavyam katham vimodha paribhavayami. Katham vimodha paribhavayami. How can I see the Lord? Right? This is how a devotee thinks. I am vimodha. Katham paribhavayami. How can I perceive the Lord? I am ignorant. So, Prabhupada writes that svabhava means one's own spiritual nature or original constitutional position, unaffected by the modes. Sagunan samati tetan brahma bhuyaya kalpute. So, such devotees who are able to see the Lord, Chakravarti Bhatt says, they naturally see the Lord, not by sadhana. Naturally, not by sadhana, the sages have destroyed illusion and difference arising from gunas of maya. Such authorities can by nature understand the position of the Lord. But a conditioned soul not freed from modes is unable to realize the Supreme. So one has to come out of this mode. Straigunya Vishaya Veda Nistraigunya Bhavarjuna. Now 24th is describing Lord as transcendental to material creation and how he descends to instruct people. Prashantamaya Gunakarma Lingam Anamarupam sadasadvimuktam Jnanopadeshaya grihita deham Namamahetvam purusham puranam Prashantamaya gunakarma lingam Anamarupam sadasadvimuktam Jnanopadeshaya grihita deham Namamahetvam purusham puranam.
O completely peaceful Lord, although material nature, fruitive activities and their consequent material names and forms are your creation, you are unaffected by them. Therefore, your transcendental name is different from material names and your form is different from material forms. You assume a form resembling a material body just to give us instructions like those of Bhagavad Gita. But actually, you are the supreme original person. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you.
Okay, very nice verse. Prashanta. Oh Lord, we are very prashanta, peaceful. Right? Maya guna karma lingam. So Maya guna, these modes of material nature, are symptomized by karma lingam, symptomized by karma, fruitive activities, right? Maya guna karma lingam. And anama rupam, Lord doesn't have any material name or form. So there is nama and rupa for all the living entities because of modes. But Lord doesn't have that. And Lord is not affected by maya guna karma lingam. Then sadasad. Sadasad means what is manifested and unmanifested modes. So Lord is vimuktam from all this. Lord is vimukta. He is liberated, not liberated, he is transcendental to this maya guna karma lingam, then anamarupam, sadasad. He is beyond all this. Living entities are within all this, but Lord is beyond all this. So why does he come inside this material world? Nanopadeshaya grihita deham. Grihita deham. He accepts with different bodies as different incarnations for jnanopadeshaya, to teach transcendental knowledge to living entities, like Bhagavad Gita. Grihita deham. Namamahe tvam purusham puranam. O purusham puranam, O supreme original person, namamahe. Please, I'm offering obeisances unto you. So Yamunacharya, he told in Stotra Ratna, constant devotional service will free one from material desires. One will feel joyful to have a fitting master. Bhavantam evanacharam nirantara prashanta nishyesha manorathantara kadaham aikantika nitya kinkara praharshayishyami sanatha jivitam. So devotee thinks that by serving the Lord constantly, one is freed from material desires and completely pacified. So when will I be able to engage as a permanent servant of my eternal fitting master like that? So material contamination is completely absent for the Lord and pure devotee. Lord is prashanta, completely peaceful, and devotee is also prashanta. So Lord has no material name or form. Avajayananti mamoda. People will misunderstand him when he descends into human form. Right? Manushim tani mashrita. So, grihita deham. When Lord does grihita deham, people will misunderstand him. Some people, modhas. Right? But here he says, he is purusham puranam. Although he is grihita deha, he is purusham puranam. So then 25th verse, our Anshuman says, anarthas make people interested in creations of maya. Okay? And wander perpetually in this material world. Tvanmaya rajite loke vastu buddhya grihadishu bhramantikama lobheshya moha vibhranta chetasa tvanmaya rajite loke vastu buddhya grihadishu bhramantikama lobhershya moha vibhranta chetasah.
O my Lord, those whose hearts are bewildered by the influence of lust, greed, envy and illusion are interested only in false hearth and home in this world created by your maya. Attached to home, wife and children, they wander in this material world perpetually.
So anarthas, like tan maya rachite loke, maya rachita, rachana. Rachana means creation. Okay, proper translates it as manufacturing. Right? So all this world is manufactured by Lord's energy. Tan maya rachite loke. Then this loka, this maya rachita loka, is appearing to be factual. Vastu buddhya, grihadishu. It appears factual, vastu. It's substance. That's what people think. Who are such people? Modas, right? Who are grihadishu. They just take shelter in home, then etc. Then bhramati, they wander in this material world only because of what? Kama, lust, lobha, greed, irshya, envy, moha, illusion. Vibhranta, they are bewildered by all these anarthas. Right? Vibhranta chetasaha. They wander everywhere. They accept all this as factual. Adhyana sarva bhutatman kama karma indriyashaya moha pasho dhradaschinno bhagavam stava darshanat adhyana sarva bhutanam sarva bhutatman kama karma indriyashaya moha pasho dhradaschinno bhagavam stava darshanat.
O Supersoul of all living entities, O Personality of Godhead, simply by seeing you, I have now been freed from all lusty desires, which are the root cause of insurmountable illusion and bondage in the material world.
So, people are bound by karma, kama, lobha, irsya, moha, all this, in the 25th verse. How to come out of all that, especially lust, by taking darshan of Supreme Lord. Right, your darshan frees one from lust. Adhyana sarva bhutatman kama karma indriyashaya moha pasho dhrudas chinno bhagavam stava darshanat. It happens by your darshan. That's how he offered beautiful prayers to Lord Kapildev. Then in the 27th verse, so the merciful Lord Kapila explains Anshuman the path of knowledge. So 28th verse, he says, now you can take the horse. So your forefathers can be delivered only by Ganga, Ganges water. There is no other way. So then Anshuman circumambulated Kapildev, offered obeisances, brought the horse back, and Sagara completed the sacrifice. So he had to wait. His sons went away, and his grandson had to bring the horse. Like that. So then Anshuman, he left the kingdom, then with no anxiety and bondage. And Sagara also, he followed Arva Muni's instructions and then he achieved supreme destination. And that's how the chapter ends. So we'll take Prabhuji is online. Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, Radhesham Prabhu, could you please speak on few things in this chapter? Hare Krishna Prabhu. Speaker? Oh God, I press the red button.
Red button. Disconnect.
Can't do it. What is there? Offense. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Yes, Prabhu, please.
So, this chapter of the sons of Agra meeting Lord Kapila Dev, this chapter is one very interesting and important thing.
In verse number 10, it says that the sons of Sat comes from religion. And this aspect of the great. And the emanated from that. So, in verse 10, we see that the sons of Sat, they saw Kapila, they saw the horse, and immediately they shouted, No, he's a sinful man. Kill him, kill him. So shouting like this, they all attacked. So they made a 50 dash. And Prabhupada explained in text number 11, the word Madhyatikrama. Two lessons are there. One is, one should not make a snap decision. To hasty conclusion without advice, without understanding situation properly, artfully, through contemplation. That is one thing. And another one, interestingly, Prabhupada, that when one commits with offense to Mahat, the Mahat makes not a difficult, but one's own fire body, the temperature of it is increased to such a degree that one is burnt. Just like between Yudhishthira and Duryodhana, you know, Krishna says in Mahabharata that Duryodhana and his their own sensitivity and sinful hankering, they to burn them. So this actually comes to that when one commits sinful act, or one especially mishandles Mahatmas, then they are burnt by their own bad karma. And what confirms that Kapila sang not arising. In fact, it says that there is no such answer from him. Rather, they were burnt by their own karma. So, as opposed to the division of the sons of Satan, you can see the Antiman in text number 19. As he goes to meet Kapila, he saw the sage Kapila Vishnu sitting and he's offering obeisance, followed his palm, and he offered many wonderful and glorification of the great. Actually, it's very to read this prayer and Shiman, because every great lives for such purpose and executes such an act, which are all benefits for all the conditions, and such activities are memorable and worth glorifying, and one should glorify heartily and cherish that. That is why that even when we go to meet our Sutma, we should praise his act. And by praising them, they don't gain anything, but we gain. We stand to gain. And we glorify Shiva. Nirvishesha Shunta Karne. In the same manner, every great Mahat performs wonderful activities in line with the law, induced by love for God, for the welfare of the world. So when Anshuman glorified Kapila with various verses, the result of that was, as explained in text number 27, Lord Kapila became pleased and he became merciful and he explained to him the path of. So that is the transcendental that we achieved by pleasing Kapila. So sons of Sadra got changed life. And Anshuman got another, especially because he did not take the risky batch, but he very carefully, like you say, Vandamoyi Sakadin Hati. So while approaching the Acharyas, the Parampara, we need to approach them with great caution and not to mistake the mundane material. Even if something apparently appears to be like a mistake, one should not become a choir because of foolishness. One should not come to sleeping country. Like, Shuman also saw the hall, and Shuman also saw nearby, but he did not come to ask him. But he knew that Lord Kapila as the Supreme Lord. So, thus he became. So, he not only could gain transcendence, but also could find out to bring back all the sons of Sal. It's very beautiful. Thank you much.
Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you so much. Thank you, Prabhu. And now we'll have a short break. After 5 minutes, we'll start the next chapter, Prabhu.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Otherwise, it's not very clear. Oh, I don't have a book. Shri Shuka Uvacha Amshumamscha Tapastepe Ganganayana Kamaya Kalam Mahantam Nashaknot Tatah Kalena Samsthitaha.
Sukdev Goswami continued, King Anshuman, like his grandfather, performed austerities for a very long time. Nonetheless, he could not bring the Ganges to this material world, and thereafter, he, in due course of time, he died.
So the story is like this. We have discussed so far that Sagara wanted to do Ashwamedha. Indra stole the horse. Then Sagara's 60,000 sons went to search the horse, and then they failed. They were burnt to ashes because of their own offense to Kapil Muni. Then Asamanjasa, who is another son of Sagara, he left the kingdom. Then Asamanjasa's son, Anshuman, he found out what happened with the 60,000 sons. So Kapil Muni, he met Kapil Muni, and Kapil Muni suggested that he should bring Ganga down. Okay, then they will be delivered. So he's trying for it. So he will also fail. He did austerities, right? And his son, Dilipa, he also failed. Right, but Bhagiratha, he succeeded. So second verse says, Anshuman himself and Dilipa, his son, was unable to bring the Ganges to this material world, and he also became victim of death in due course of time. Then Dilipa's son Bhagiratha performed very severe austerities to bring the Ganges to this material world. Right. So now Ganga appeared. Third verse, Darshayam Asatam Devi Prasanna Varadasmite Ityuktasvam Abhiprayam Shashamsa Vanato Nrupa.
Thereafter, Mother Ganges appeared before King Bhagiratha and said, I am very much satisfied with your austerities, and I am now prepared to give you benedictions as you desire. Being thus addressed by Ganga Devi, Mother Ganges, the king bowed his head before her and explained his desire.
So Ganga appeared. I am satisfied. I will give you benediction. Then Bhagiratha expressed his desire. Now, fourth verse. Ganga had two considerations. So you descend and then deliver my forefathers. That was the request. But she had two conditions. That is mentioned in fourth and fifth verses. Kopidharayita vegam Patantyame Mahitale अन्यथा भूतलं भित्वा नृपयास्ये रसातलं किं चाहं न भुवं यास्ये नरामय्यात्मरुज्यन्त्यघं मृजन्ती तदघं क्वाहं राजंस्तत्र विचिन्तयाम्.
Mother Ganges replied, when I fall from the sky to the surface of the planet Earth, the water will certainly be very forceful. Who will sustain that force? If I am not sustained, I shall pierce the surface of the earth and go down to Rasatal, the Patal area of the universe. O King, I do not wish to go down to the planet Earth, for there the people in general will bathe in my water to cleanse themselves of the reactions of their sinful deeds. When all these sins, sinful reactions accumulate in me, how shall I become free from them? You must consider this very carefully.
So, kopi dharayita vegam. My vegam, my force, when I fall down to the earth is so much that if so, no one can sustain it, I will pierce the earth and go to Rasatal. That would be my force. So now, kopi dharayate vegam, who can sustain it? Show me one person. Second, kim chaham na bhavam yasye nara mai amrijani agham. So people will come and take bath in me and clean their sins. And I will have to take all that sins. Who will protect me from all the sins? So, two things. Rajam statra vichintayam. Chinta karo. So, you think about this. Right? Think about these two things. People, somebody should sustain my force. Second, somebody should clean my sinful reactions also, which I am accepting from them. So, Prabhupada writes in the purport that only Supreme Lord can neutralize sinful reactions. Here Ganga is also worried about the sinful reactions. Okay, they will dump their sins in my waters. Where will I go? She was having that consideration. But Prabhupada says, Supreme Lord can neutralize sinful reactions. Sarvadharman parityadya. So Lord can accept the reactions of anyone's sinful deeds. Sarvadharman parityadya mam ekam sharanam vaja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha isyami. I can cleanse you of all sins if you take shelter of me. But Ganga is saying that if you take shelter of me, if you take bath in me, I will accumulate all those sins. Who will deliver me? That was her consideration. But here, Lord is very pavitra. Sun is never contaminated by any worldly infection. Okay, sun can absorb water from ocean, salty water from ocean, sweet water from river, or urine from toilet. He can absorb anything, but he is not contaminated at all. From SBT he can absorb, he can purify. So one who is very powerful is not affected by any sinful activity. So Ganges fears being burdened with people's sins. This indicates that no one but Supreme Personality of Godhead is able to neutralize sinful reactions, okay, whether one's own or their others. Now Prabhupada also speaks about spiritual master, Guru. Guru will also accept the sins of disciple and partially suffers for them. So every disciple should be very careful not to commit any sinful activities after initiation by a Guru. Because Guru will have to suffer for them, partially at least. So bad dreams, we have heard in 8th canto somewhere also. Some other Gajendra episode. Gajendra Sabhyar, correct. So Guru also will suffer bad dreams because of disciples' misbehavior. So poor spiritual master is kind and merciful enough to accept a disciple and partially suffer for the disciple's sinful activities. But Krishna, being merciful to his servant, neutralizes the reactions of sinful deeds for the servant who engages in preaching his glories. So Prabhupada went to the midst of material civilization, absorbed in sense gratification and sinful activities, and came out unaffected. Just like some devotee was giving this analogy. Kabaddi player, so he plays kabaddi, he goes to the other side, and then 10 players are trying to catch him. But if he is powerful, he will catch all the 10 and then bring them to this side. But if some weak player goes, he will be absorbed there. Something like that. Prabhupada went to west alone and then he brought all of them here, right? Not at all affected by their sinful activities, but delivered them from their sinful activities. So, like that. Then sixth verse, see the brilliant reply of Bhagiratha. Sri Bhagiratha uvacha sadhavo nyasina shanta brahmishta loka pavanah harantyagham tenga sangat teshvaste yagabhidhari.
Bhagiratha said, those who are saintly because of devotional service and are therefore in renounced order of life, free from material desire, who are pure devotees, expert in following the regulative principles mentioned in the Vedas, are always glorious and pure in behavior and are able to deliver all fallen souls. When such pure devotees bathe in your water, the sinful reaction accumulated from other people will certainly be contracted. For such devotees always keep in the core of their hearts the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can vanquish all sinful reactions.
So pure devotees bathe in Ganges and they will contract your sinful activity. He will answer the second question first. Second question is, I will accumulate sins. What is your answer for that? He will answer that first. Sadhavo nyasina shanta. So sadhavo, great devotees of the Lord, sannyasis, nyasina, shanta, they are very peaceful, freed from all material disturbances. Brahmishta lokapavanaha. Brahmishta means they are very focused on following the rules and regulations in the Vedas. Brahmishta. Brahma is also called Vedas. So Vedas are also called Brahma. So they are lokapavanaha. Because they themselves are so pure, they can purify others also. They are lokapavanaha. So haranti agham te angasangat. By giving them, by bathing in Ganges water, Anga Sangat, by giving you their association of their bodies, means they bathe in your waters. Haranti te agham. They will just steal away all your agham. Whatever agham you have accumulated because of others bathing in you, they will take away all those sinful reactions. Right? They can purify. Te shvaste agavidharihi. Teshvaste agavidhari. How will they be purified? How did they get this purifying effect? Because Lord will purify them. Lord has purified them. Lord is always staying in the hearts of them. Right? Agavid Harihi. He is agavid. Hari is Supreme Lord and he is agavid. He is a vanquisher of all sinful activities. So, by dint of being devotees of agavid Harihi, they can purify you also. Chakravartabad gives this comment. By bathing in your waters, the devotees will remove their sins, those sins. But who will remove the sins from devotees? Lord, the destroyer of sin, will remove them. Without the Lord, sin is not destroyed. By holy places, or holy rivers, or atonements. Like that. This is the power of devotees. What is that verse? Tirthi Kurvanti. Bhavadvidha Bhagavatas. So devotees are like holy places personified. They can remove the contamination of all holy places. Right? So one should respect saintly persons because they are so powerful. If one fails to respect saintly persons, he has to fast. If sannyasi comes, if one doesn't offer obeisances, he has to fast that day. Prabhupada says. So one must be extremely careful to refrain from committing offenses at the lotus feet of a devotee. So only how can the sinful reactions be contracted? By bhakti, by devotional service. So methods of prayaschitta and other jnana, they are inadequate. Where do we understand this? Where is the reference for this? Sinful reactions are contracted by bhakti only, nothing else. Verse Kechit Kevalaya Bhaktiya Vasudeva Parayanaha Agham Dhunvanti Karsnyan Niharamiva Bhaskara. Okay. Now seventh verse. Dharayishyati te vegam Rudrasvatma Sharinam Yasmin Otam Idam Protam Vishwamsati Vatantushu.
Like a cloth woven of threads extending for its length and breadth, this entire universe in all its latitude and longitude is situated in a different potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Shiva is the incarnation of Lord, and thus he represents the super soul in the embodied soul. He can sustain your forceful waves on his head.
So Shiva can sustain your forceful waves. Okay. Kshiram yatha yadvikar vishesha yogat. So if Supreme Lord is milk, Shiva is curd. So he is non-different. So Govinda assumes the form of Shiva for the special purpose of material transactions. So he has the capacity to bear your force. So he answered the both questions. Okay. Ityuktvasa nripo devam tapasato shayat shivam kalena alpiyasa rajam tasyeshas chashvatushyata.
After saying this, Bhagiratha satisfied Lord Shiva by performing austerities. O King Parikshit, Lord Shiva was very quickly satisfied with Bhagiratha.
So Bhagiratha satisfied Lord Shiva. Now he did one tapasya to please Ganga, and now he has to do another set of tapa right, to please Shiva. So Prabhupada says Shiva is Asutosh, and people who are attached to material benedictions, they will go to Shiva. And Shiva will bestow them very quickly. So although the materialistic persons know that material happiness has nothing to do with happiness, material happiness is nothing but another side of suffering. Okay? It doesn't have happiness, but it will another side of suffering. But still they want it. And who can quickly provide it? Shiva. They will go to him. But if one is serious about being happy spiritually, he must take shelter of Lord Vishnu. As the Lord personally demands it. Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. You keep me number one, ek. Okay, don't keep. Keep all other things second, third, fourth, fifth. But keep me number one. Okay, then, aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami maasuchah. Like that. Now, ninth verse. Tatheti ragna ragna bhitam sarvaloka hitah shiva dadharavahito gangam padaputa jalam harehe.
When King Bhagiratha approached Lord Shiva and requested him to sustain the forceful waves of the Ganges, Lord Shiva accepted the proposal by saying,
"Let it be so."
Then with great attention he sustained the Ganges on his head. For the water of the Ganges is purifying, having emanated from the toes of Lord Vishnu.
So Bhagiratha brought Ganges to the place here. So now, how did this happen? Okay, Shiva accepts Bhagiratha's proposal. So with great attention, he sustained Ganges on his head. And here there is a mention, Pada Pota Jalam Harehi. Because it is emanating from the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu, it has the purifying effect, Ganges waters. So you see, bearing the current of water on one's head is not an easy task, right? You see, you stand under a waterfall, you will understand. You go for trekking in monsoon, you stand under waterfall. From such a height, something will just drop on your head. It's as if some stone is there. Dropping on your head. Now here from higher planetary systems, Ganga is coming on the head with the force of piercing the earth and going to Rasatal with that force. And Shiva is sustaining that force. Like that. So many people glorify Lord Shiva for this act. But what is Shiva's consciousness? I am holding the Charanamrit of Lord Vishnu on my head. That was Shiva's consciousness. Right? So, Yat Shaucha Nishrita Sarit Pravaroda Kena Tirthena Murdhyati Kritena Shiva Shiva Bhut Dhyatu Manas Shamala Shaila Nishrita Vajram Dhyayat Charam Bhagavad Charanarandam. Kapil Dev says, so, Yat Shaucha Nishrita Sarit Pravaroda Kena. This Ganges water can sanctify all the three worlds And Shiva, who is very auspicious, becomes all the more auspicious by holding Ganges waters on his head. Right? It's so jan isrita sarit pravarodakena, tirthena murni adhikritena, Shiva Shivobhut. Shiva Shivobhut. He is already auspicious, he becomes even more auspicious by holding Ganga water. Yadarhanamba sadhya punati sahachandra lalama lokan. So it can purify all the three worlds. Ganga's water can purify all the three worlds. So the 10th verse says that Bhagiratha brought Ganga to the place where the bodies of his forefathers lay burned to ashes. And in the 11th verse, Bhagiratha was actually going on, how did it happen? Bhagiratha was going on a swift chariot and Ganga is following Bhagiratha from behind. And on the way, she is purifying so many countries like that. So 12th and 13th verses describe the glory of Ganga. Yajjala sparsha matrena brahmadanda hata api sagaratmaja divam jagmu kevalam deha basmabhi.
Because the sons of Sagar Maharaj had offended a great personality, the heat of their bodies had increased and they were burned to ashes. But simply by being sprinkled with the water from the Ganges, all of them became eligible to go to the heavenly planets. What then is to be said of those who use the water of Mother Ganges to worship her?
This is the power of Ganga. Next verse also we will discuss and then discuss the purport. We will recite. Bhasmi bhutanga sangena svaryata sagaratmajah kimpuna shraddhaya devim sevanteye dhritavrataha.
Simply by having water from the Ganges come in contact with the ashes of their burned bodies, the sons of Sagar Maharaj were elevated to the heavenly planets. Therefore, what is to be said of a devotee who worships Mother Ganges faithfully with a determined vow? One who only imagines the benefit that accrues to such a devotee. One can only imagine the benefit that accrues to such a devotee.
So Sagara's sons were purified. Okay, although they were ashes and they were burned to ashes, right? They were purified. What to speak of one very attentively, voluntarily worships Ganges water? And how does that worship happen? Offering Ganges water to Ganges. Just take a palm full of water from Ganga river, offer it back to her. She will not lose anything, she will not gain anything. Right? But the worshipper who is doing that activity, he will gain tremendously. So that is the way. So even Dwarkavasis are also, they were offering presentations to Krishna. Just now we discussed in the first canto. When Krishna enters Dwarka, all the Dwarkavasis will bring so many presentations. And give it to Atmaram, self-satisfied Lord. And Lord accepts it. Okay, analogy is given. Offering a ghee lamp to sun. Okay, who is the source of all heat and light. What will he do with the ghee lamp? But he will accept the worship of the worshipper. Worshipper will get benefited. So when a devotee also offers the Lord Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam in great devotion, although Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam are belonging to the Lord, still when a devotee picks them up and then offers to the Supreme Lord, Lord will accept them. So one must simply take advantage of bhakti process, because by following this process, one does not lose anything, but one gains the favor of Supreme Person. It's very simple. Just giving his own property back to him. Right? A little meager portion of his own property back to him. That is bhakti. And you will gain his favor. That's all we need to do. For example, you go to some CEO of some multinational company or some very great wealthy man, we go to him and take 10 rupees from his pocket and give him. Take this. Okay? Not slack. Right? If he's good, okay, he will be pleased. Oh, you gave me 10 rupees. Something like that. Here it will not work. It may not appear logical also, but that's what we are doing in Lord's worship. Patram pushpam phalayam toyam. It's not even 10 rupees for Krishna. Right? He is the proprietor of millions of universes. Right? In one universe, one plant, okay, you pick up one flower and offer it to him. And he will be pleased. He will take you back to himself. That way. You can understand how much Balaram Shakti Prabhu is gaining benefit. Daily he supplies so many flowers. All the flowers that we are offering are produced by him only. He gets credit for all that. Morning, he got so many flowers for dressing. 14th verse. Nahi etat paramascharyam svardhunya yadidhoditam anantacharanam boja prasutaya bhavachidah.
Because Mother Ganges emanates from the lotus toe of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Anantadeva, she is able to liberate one from material bondage. Therefore, whatever is described here with about her is not at all wonderful.
It's not a very wonderful thing. Not surprise. Ganga gives liberation from bondage. After all, she emanated from Lord's lotus feet. Okay, why are you getting surprised? It can deliver. She can deliver like that. 15th. Sannivesha mano yasmin shraddhaya munayo malah traigunyam dustyajam hitva sadyo yata astadatmatam.
Great sages, completely freed from material lust desires, devote their minds fully to the service of the Lord. Such persons are liberated from material bondage without difficulty, and they become transcendentally situated, acquiring the spiritual quality of the Lord. This is the glory of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
So this is about the transcendental situation of devotees. Right? Beautiful qualities of Lord's devotees are mentioned here. So that ends Bhagiratha's story and the descent of Ganga. Now 16th verse, 16th till 39th verse are the story of Saudasa. Very interesting story. So I think we'll complete here only. We'll not, Katvanga story, that is little more elaborate, we'll take in the next session. So today we'll complete Saudasa story and end. So I will be summarizing the storyline. So 16th and 17th verses describe that Bhagiratha's son is Shruta. Shruta's son is Nabha. Nabha's son is Sindhudvipa. His son is Ayutayu. Ayutayu's son is Rituparna. And he is the friend of Nala, Maharaj Nala. So he taught him gambling. And Nala taught him horse maintenance. Right? And that Rituparna, his son is Sarvakama. Okay? Prabhupada just makes a small comment about this Nalaraja teaching gambling, etc. Prabhupada says these materialistic activities are not for devotees. Right? Devotee is not at all expert in materialistic activities like gambling. Yudhishthira Maharaj, he gambled. But he lost, right? So devotees are not very expert in materialistic activities. Prabhupada says, they are not meant for them only, okay? How do you expect them to perform in that? So devotee remains pure because he does not do any sinful activities like breaking four rules, like that. So we came till Sarvakama. So 18th verse. Sarvakama's son is Sudasa. Sudasa's son is Saudasa. So this Saudasa is the husband of Damayanti. Right? Not Nala Damayanti, Sudasa's wife. Nala's wife is different. So Mitra Saha, this Damayanti, this Sudasa, Saudasa also has two names. Mitra Saha and Kalmashapada. Kalmashapada. So there are reasons for it. Why he got these two names? Okay? We will discuss now. So, but he didn't get any son. Why he didn't get a son? Because he was cursed by Vasishta. You will become a rakshas. You will not have a son. So he cursed him. So what was the story behind it? You got the question? Parikshit Maharaj also got the question. So 19th verse, he asks, why spiritual master Vasishta cursed Saudasa to become rakshasa? So 20th verse onwards, Sukadeva Goswami narrates the story. So Saudasa, he's a king, once he killed a Rakshasa. So he kills Rakshasa, but that Rakshasa had another brother. So Saudasa didn't kill him. He forgave him and then, okay, you can go. He didn't kill him. So, but this Rakshasa, because this Saudasa killed his brother, he had enmity towards this Saudasa. He went to king's kingdom and he became the cook of the king. Right? In the king's house, he became cook. So one day, he cooked something with human flesh. He cooked human flesh. Right? And that too, when did he cook like that? When Saudasa invited his spiritual master Vasishtha for dinner, this cook cooked human flesh. And without knowing that, Saudasa served his spiritual master human flesh. So Vasishtha understood, this is Saudasa, this is human flesh, right? Then in that momentary anger, Vasishtha cursed him. You become a man-eater. You are serving me human flesh. Am I a man-eater? Right? You are serving human flesh. So you become a man-eater. You become Rakshasa. He cursed him. Then actually Vasishtha realized the mistake. Oh, it's not Saudasa's fault. Some Rakshasa became his cook and then he did like this. So I unnecessarily cursed him. He felt like that. Then Vasishtha, because he felt that he did a mistake, he undertook 12 years of austerity to cleanse himself for having cursed this faultless king Saudasa. Now, when Vasishtha cursed him, that's about Vasishtha. Vasishtha cursed him. Saudasa, he is also a powerful king. He can kill Rakshasas also. He can curse also. So he took water in his hand. I will curse Vasishtha. Right? he was about to curse. Then his wife Madayanti, she came and said, hey, he is spiritual master. You cannot curse him. Okay? Then he already had this water in his hand to curse. What he will do? Okay, he just put it on his own feet. He became Kalmashapada. Right? Because of that reason. There are some black spots on his feet. If he throws it anywhere, it will affect that part. Right? He cannot throw on Vasishtha. So he threw on his own feet. He became Kalmashapada. Then, his name is also Mitrasaha. Why? Because he accepted this gentle advice from his wife, Damayanti. He became Mitrasaha. So Saudasa had two names, Kalmashapada and Mitrasaha. Okay? So now 25th verse. So 25th verse says that Saudasa, because of Vasishtha's curse, Saudasa became Rakshasa. Means Saudasa acquired the propensity of Rakshasa, man-eating Rakshasa. Right? So he was wandering and then once he met a Brahmana couple. Right? They were mating. So the Brahmana wife, Brahmani, so she wanted a son and her husband was impregnating her. Right? When that affair was happening, so Saudasa happened to go there and then he wanted to eat that Brahmana. Right? Because of his acquired propensity of being a man-eater, he wanted to eat that Brahmana. So he seized that Brahmana. Okay, but his wife implored, you are a king. You are not a man-eater. Okay, don't act irreligiously. I have a desire to have a son and please return my husband. Right? So she pleaded. Then 28th verse, she said, human body is meant for universal benefits. You cannot kill it untimely. So she gave another argument. So Prabhupada elaborates on human life here. Prabhupada means back to basics. Every time, wherever there is opportunity, he brings us back to basics. Human life. Hari Hari Bifale Janama Gunayana. So human body is extremely valuable. One can understand instructions of Krishna and attain ultimate destination of living entity. That is possible through human body only. Aho anrijanma kila janma shobhanam. Who says this? Aho anrijanma kila janma. King Raghugana says. To whom? Yadavara. Great. So even demigods also glorify Bharatvarsha in human birth in the fifth canto. So success of life is to stop the process of repeated birth and death and go back to Godhead to be engaged in the service of Radha Krishna. Therefore, taking a human body is meant for completing one's progress in life. So killing human being is very serious. Prabhupada says, say some dog dies or some bird dies or some insect dies. So nobody cares. Nobody puts a case on the killer. Right? But when human being dies, it becomes a big issue. Postmortem, then you have to catch the fellow and so many things have to be done. One cannot get away with that. Many people are maintaining slaughterhouses. They have to be hanged for death. How many times they have to die for the number of chickens or pigs they killed, goats they killed. Prabhupada says, because human birth is very rare, you cannot kill a human being. If somebody kills a human being, it's a very big thing, big sin. Right? That's very important for the execution of mission of life. So 29th verse, the Brahmani says, he is learned, highly qualified Brahmana. He's not any ordinary personality. Right? He's very austere. He worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then he is engaged in Brahmanical duties. So killing such a person is very sinful. Another argument she gives. Prabhupada says, who is a real Brahmana? Real Brahmana is not a superficial Brahmana by birth, but he was qualified with Brahmanical symptoms. He is a real Brahmana. What are the symptoms? Shamo tamas tapastosam kshantirarjavayavacha jnanam vijnanam astikyam brahma karma swabhavajam. Like that. So in the 30th verse, the Brahmani is saying, so religious principles, she is speaking about religious principles. Brahmana should always be protected by a king. We are Rajarshi. Rajarshis should protect Brahmanas. They cannot kill. So you are unnecessarily killing. Prabhupada elaborates in the purport about the duty of a Rajarshi. Duty of a Rajarshi is to maintain Brahmanical culture. So Rajarshi means a king who behaves like a rishi. A raja who behaves like rishi is called Rajarshi. He is called Naradeva, representative of Supreme Lord. So Brahmana, woman, child, old man, cow, they can never be punished. Okay? Even if they commit some mistakes here and there, no one should punish them. Like that. So 31st verse. You are worshipped in all learned circles. Brahmani is telling Saudasa, you are worshipped in all learned circles. So don't kill saintly, sinless Brahmana who is well versed in Vedic knowledge. So if you kill a Brahmana, that is equivalent to killing embryo or cow killing. Means killing a Brahmana, killing a child who has not yet born in the within the womb only, or cow killing, all these three are on equal level, equally sins, right? Bhruvana. Cow or living entity in embryo. So Vedic culture is like destroying undeveloped embryo of soul in the womb is as sinful as killing a cow or Brahmana. Abortion means one will accumulate the sin of killing a cow or a Brahmana. Cow slaughter means one will accrue the sin of abortion or killing a Brahmana. Like that. So the idea that scientists can develop a chemical situation resembling that of an egg and bring life form is nonsensical. He says that embryo point Prabhupada is saying. Crude atheistic understanding that living entity is a combination of matter belongs to grossest ignorance. Like that. Now finally she says 32nd verse. No, he is still not stopping. Saudasa, 32nd verse she says, I cannot live with my husband, without my husband. So first eat me, then you eat him. She finally said like that. So Prabhupada elaborates on that. Wife is like a dead body without husband, as this Brahmani is saying. So sati or sahamarana means woman voluntarily dies with the husband by falling in funeral pyre. That has to be discontinued because when the woman is not having that voluntary spirit also, she is forced to enter the fire. That's why it has been discontinued. But ideally, what this concept is that the wife could not tolerate separation from the husband. Okay, she is, husband is her everything. That's why. So, sati or sahamarana, okay. So, independence for woman means miserable life, like that. Girl must be married, she must be protected at all stages of life, like that. Now, 33rd verse. So, because although Brahmani spoke such pitiable words and she gave so many arguments, valid arguments, astrically aligned arguments, she spoke logically, although she pleaded in many ways, because of Vasishta's curse, the propensity of man-eating has become so prominent in Saudasa, and he killed the Brahmana and ate him. Like that. This is an example of destiny. So as one is put into distress by destiny, destiny can also put one in a happy situation. So destiny is extremely strong. But one can change his destiny if one comes to Krishna consciousness. Karmani nirdahati kinducha bhakti bhajam. Like that. So now 34th verse, because Saudasa killed this Brahman and ate him, so the chaste Brahmani, she cursed Saudasa. Because when I am engaging in sex, you killed my husband, right? Or because when my husband is engaging in sex, you killed him. So whenever you attempt to unite sexually with your wife, you will be killed. You will die. Right? Means you will not have children anymore. Like that. So, and this Brahmani, she died. She did sati and then she died. She attained the same destination as that Brahmana. Right? Now, this curse went on for 12 years. So, 12 years, our Saudasa had the propensity of a man-eater and then he was going. So Saudasa was released from Vasishta's curse after 12 years. And after 12 years, when he wanted to have sex with Damayanti, then she reminded, "Oh, Brahmani cursed you. We can't have union." She said like that. She seems to be a very intelligent woman. Earlier when Saudasa was about to curse Vasishta, she stopped. Okay. And now she is reminding of Brahmani's curse also. So 38th verse. So king gave up any future happiness of future sex, and then by destiny he remained sonless. But later, with king's permission, Vasishta begot a son, okay, in Madayanti. So this is, as we discussed in the previous class also, when the Kshatriya cannot impregnate the wife for some various reasons, so a Brahmana can do that with king's permission, with the husband's permission. And the son belongs to the father only, king only. So Madayanti bore child, but after 7 years. Vasishta impregnated her, but she bore child after 7 years. So means after 7 years also, he is not coming out. Vasishta took a stone and then stuck on her abdomen. Then the child came out. So that child is called Asmaka. Because the child is born of a stone, she was called Asmaka. So that is about Asmaka. So 40 to 41 verse. Asmaka's son is Balika. And this Balika, Parashuram would just go around to kill the kings, right? When Parashuram came to Balika, he was surrounded by women. So because Parashuram saw him with so many women, so he did not kill Balika. That's why his name is called Nari Kavacha. So this Balika became the progenitor of more Kshatriyas, right? He's also called Molaka. He's the root of Kshatriya dynasty. So he gave birth to Dasharatha. Okay, he is not the father of Ram, that will come later. So he gave birth to Dasharatha. Dasharatha gave birth to Aidavidi, and his son is Vishwasaha, and his son is Khatvanga. So Khatvanga story is mentioned from 42nd verse till the rest of the chapter, which we will discuss on Monday, in Monday's class. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Can you please speak few words, Prabhu, on this chapter, Ganga's descent? Hare Krishna, yes, Prabhu, we can hear you, Prabhu.
First name of Amshuman and followed by Dilip and then followed by Bhagiratha. One thing I understand is Mother Ganga has not come to this world so easily, but it has been brought with great difficulty, Bhagiratha Prayatnam. So this is the Supreme Lord, you know, extends his mercy through his foot wash in the form of Ganga, like his Charanamrita, to this world. But that mercy has been brought by a series of great tapasyas performed by great pious personality kings. Those have done a lot of tapasya and lived a very ideal life. So when I read this section first time, I felt actually all our acharyas in the succession actually have brought the mercy of the Supreme Lord to reach it to us in a way that we will be able to take advantage of it. Because if Mother Ganga would come straight down, she herself says, I will pierce a hole in the earth and go down to the Patala where she didn't want to go. Similarly, the most difficult knowledge of the Rajavidya, the Brahma Vidya, it is actually brought down in the succession of the Acharyas, Parampara Paras. So reach it to us in a way that we can savor it, we can relish it, and we can apply it in our life, and we can become completely freed from all sin by completely surrendering to the Supreme Lord. So, after Nir Bhagirathas, whatever one verse 16 and 17, in that Purple Prabhupada writes that by the grace of Krishna, the Pandavas lost everything by gambling and were deprived of their kingdom by family and home. Because they were not experts in the gambling art.
Yeah.
And then Prabhupada writes that a devotee may not be expert in materialistic activities. He writes that. Therefore, material activities are not suitable for the living entities, especially the devotees. So, this teaches us one interesting lesson that a devotee should not try to compare their material prowess with the karmi's material prowess. Because sometimes the karmi has a huge building. They have 200-story buildings, they have huge cars, and they have glitter and glamour. Sometimes neophyte devotees feel that we are also not less. You know, we also can be like you. We can also be very powerful like you. So sometimes they materially compete with materialists. And here Prabhupada gives a clue that a devotee need not prove his greatness in the materialistic activities necessarily. Like one time a devotee told Srila Prabhupada that Prabhupada, how wonderful is this one, owns this airport. And Prabhupada laughed and said, who said we don't own it? We are Krishna's children, so everything is owned by Krishna only. Prabhupada, including this airport also. So a devotee need not compete with karmis, to outdo the karmis in material accomplishments and material goals. On the other hand, a devotee should be, Prabhupada says, satisfied with whatever prasad is inside the Lord and remain pure and not. So at one time I remember in Chopad temple, there was a councilor meeting, Krishna Chandra Prabhu and all were present. So there was some proposal by one devotee, how some Amway or something like some one type of system where we can expand the money of the devotees in big proportions. Devotees can become crorepatis practically, so they distribute this commodity. It's like some kind of expanding loops, I think. So like one leader gives it to 30 people and then they multiply it to 30 people, like that, something like that. It goes. So when Krishna Chandra Prabhu and others and all inquired advice from Maharaja and other seniors and all, the conclusion was that devotee should not compete with materialists in expanding money, because if they try to adopt such kind of businesses which are tension producing, it is like gambling only, and that will also distract the devotee from his ultimate goal of going back to Godhead. So karmis may do it, let them do it, but devotees should not indulge in it. That was the answer given to devotees. So I was just remembering that. And also, the next pastime of Saurasa is very instructive. Actually, he had good intention in releasing the Rakshasa's brother. He thought, I killed one of the Rakshasas and then his brother let me release. But the nature of material world is that even though one may try to do good in this manner, the result he got was that the Rakshasa's brother, who was a surviving brother, he wants to take revenge. And but then he didn't take immediate revenge by killing the king, but he wanted to take revenge in a manner wanted to take it at appropriate time. So he wanted to feed human flesh to Vasishtha at a later time. In this way, like Chanakya says, the fire, death and disease should be at once counteracted, which means if the fire spark is not counteracted, it burns everything down. Similarly, the death, similarly, the disease. Similarly, even if a Rakshasa is a survival and he is forgiven, and the king accepted him as one of his men in the kitchen of his place, recognizing his revengeful attitude, and that was the first flaw, due to which that was like an innocent mistake done by the king. The result was Vasishtha Muni got human flesh on his plate, and Vasishtha Muni fired back by giving a curse to the king that he became a Rakshasa because he fed me human flesh, without knowing the subtleties of how king was having good intention, but his cook was a Rakshasa who wanted to bring disgrace and the destruction of the king. With that evil attitude, he has given human flesh. You know, Vasishtha was not aware. But then Vasishtha understood it. We immediately see how he responds to that. He says, I will undertake a 12 years austerity to cleanse myself for having cursed the faultless king, which is a very wonderful thing. If somebody commits a blunder unknowingly due to some misunderstanding, you know, one should not have given a curse or one should not have done something. He did it. Then austerities and penances, then in the mood of repentance, they actually cleanse the person, and it was appropriate for Vasishtha to take up such undertaking. But then it seems that Saurasa actually still was not satisfied with Vasishtha's repentance. So he was trying to take water to give a sharp on Vasishtha. But amazingly, he got a good, intelligent wife, Madhyanti, who forbid him that he cannot curse a Brahmana. He is an exalted person. So fortunately, he got a right advice from the wife, because of which, although he became a Rakshasa, he was only Rakshasa for 12 years only. For a period of 12 years, he had to suffer that as per the curse, and then he was relieved. And in case he sprinkled the water on Vasishtha and spelled out a curse, we don't know what could have been the effect of that. Must have been more disastrous effect. But he was fortunately saved by good advice. This is a very valuable lesson. Actually, the wife is a spiritual partner also for the husband. And also, she shares all the good and bad done by the husband. She also goes to the husband, Sahagamana. Wherever the husband goes, she also goes. So here, Madhyanti's role is very interesting, very nice. That she played a very good role in safeguarding the king from degrading himself by further cursing. Actually, in our lives also, when somebody did some blunder by misunderstanding us, how do we respond to that? Actually, Vasishtha's repentance is exemplary. The king does not. King doesn't seem to be appreciative of that. Rather, he is only thinking about what has happened to me. I have to become a Rakshasa, and this Brahmana did not understand that I am faultless. Probably here he is just thinking about himself only, Saurasa, without thinking about Vasishtha's good behavior. fortunately he is saved by his wife, Malayanti. And the subsequent section is so wonderful. When Saurasa, as a Rakshasa, is approaching this Brahmana couple to devour the Brahmana, the teachings of Brahmana's wife are really a highlight. And some of the verses that she speaks, they're all very great instructions based on the Shastra. Actually, she is trying to tell Saurasa that you are actually not a Rakshasa. This is only a temporary period of punishment given to you. And you are actually a Rajarshi. You are a great soul. She is trying to bring the best out of him. But, actually from everybody, best can be brought out. Everybody has the best side and the worst side. So his best side is he's a Rajarshi coming in Ikshwak dynasty, the wonderful family lineage. And his bad side is that unfortunately he got a Rakshasa curse for 12 years. So during that period, how he behaves is very important. So she's telling that, yes, you may have a Rakshasa body, but because you originally belong to a good family, you should bring out your good nature, she's telling. So, but this fellow is unable to write about the higher nature of the Rakshasa. So everybody has a choice in life at any given instance, how to behave. When one is deprived of some facility, and they are deprived of a position, are deprived of wealth, or project money allotment, or whatever. When one is actually put in a deprived position, one's animal side comes out, one's bad side may come out. One will have to subdue the lower nature and bring up the higher nature, remembering that all activities are actually done for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna, ultimately. So here he is unable to, give up his animal nature. He's bringing out that Rakshasa nature only. And despite her telling him many, many valuable advice, she's telling about both, about the Brahmana husband also, and she's telling about Saurasa's great lineage also. She's telling the Brahmana is not an ordinary person. He's got a human form of life. He's a highly qualified Brahmana. He's doing austerities for the Supreme Lord. He's not just some karmakandi Brahmana. He's a Brahmana desiring to worship the Supreme Lord. And also, being a wife, she has the right to earn a child through the husband, and he is about to release his human seed, give her the seed so that they can have a child. He was not even patient to allow the Brahmana to impregnate her, give her the seed, and then he could eat him. Even for that much also, he didn't give time. And then, after telling about the Brahmana's saintliness and everything, then she's also telling about Rajarshi Parampara of Ikshwaku and everything in which the Saurasa is coming. So she seems to be very patient in instructing him. But unfortunately, the instruction fell in deaf ears of Saurasa, who was at that time in the body of Rakshasa. She even told him, this is like the Brahmahatya. It's like killing a child in the womb, it's like abortion, aborting a child or killing a cow. But actually, when somebody is told about the danger of these kind of things, all that one cannot be, one is ignorant completely and one is an animal consciousness. These things don't register in the ears. Because even big top people in society, they eat cow flesh, they abort their children, and some of them even become doctors and abort millions of children. They don't know the danger of these things because of Rakshasa nature predominating. So, in this way, the advice of his wife is very religious and really in line with the religious principles. But we find that Saurasa ends up eating the Brahmana. And he in turn earned a curse that when you try to unite, somewhat similar to this happened with Pandu also. Pandu was killing from Kingdom Rishi, who had assumed Kingdom Rishi was a poor plus, he didn't have even a cottage also. So he and his wife transformed themselves into deers in the jungle, and they were uniting to produce a child. Because they thought it would be indecent and improper to unite in an open sky. So they transformed themselves into two deers and they were uniting. and want to hit the deers when they were uniting, and that was considered a very great sin actually. And due to which he was also cursed that when you try to unite with your wife, you know, you will die. And that's what happened to Pandu subsequently. Here we find a similar instance of how Saudrasa got a similar kind of curse, and he could not actually produce a son. He remained sonless, but by Vasishtha's grace he could get a child through Madayanti. But one important lesson we learn is in the Vedic times, sometimes the Vyasudeva was asked to beget children in Ambika, Ambalika and all of them, two, three of them. Similarly, here Vasishtha is begetting child in the womb of Madayanti. Somebody may think that how can a Brahmana like Vasishtha unite with a king's wife and produce a child. It is said that these Brahmanas were so exalted and so pure-hearted, they could even do this child-giving business as a service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because they understood that the king is unable to produce a child due to some reason, and they could give a child. Just as you know, we may render some service, this is one of the most difficult service that is being given to people like Vyasudeva, Vasishtha and people like that. So because they absolutely had no enjoying mentality, but they had the intention to serve the Supreme Lord, especially to continue the kingly royal lineage. Sometimes we find that Devarena Suto Uttatim, that was also there in the Vedic times. If a husband is unable to produce a child, then Devar can also be asked to give a child by the request of the husband. Similarly, here the king is requesting Vasishtha to beget a child in Madayanti. And for one to be able to beget a child like that, in case he succeeds, if they approach the wife of a king with an enjoying mentality, they would incur sin. And they are supposed to do it completely free from enjoying mentality and only with the desire to serve the king and serve the praja, ultimately for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. You can imagine how difficult such a service must be. It is not a service which could be imitatable. That is why in Kali Yuga these things are all prohibited. Devarena Kalau Pancha Vivarjayet, you know, it says like that. And in verse number 40, we find the word Palika, surrendered by women, Marikavacha and Parashuram, just dismissed him. He didn't even consider him a worthy Kshatriya to be killed, because he was surrounded by women. So he just dismissed him. And that led to the continuation of the Kshatriya dynasty, says here. So, actually, these are all little pastimes in the Srimad Bhagavatam, personally, as more stories, but very valuable lessons are brought for our lives, in our interpersonal dealings, in one's life. Because the misunderstandings actually, like the revengeful attitude of the brother Rakshasa, or the misunderstanding that Saudasa had to face, Vasishtha had to misunderstand, and Saudasa's upsetness. So these kind of small, little stories, little histories of great kings, but the instances that are presented are actually very valuable and makes us very thoughtful. So that before we act, this kind of religious sermon by his wife, so these are all very valuable. Essentially, they teach that we have a lower nature, we have a higher nature, and we have to bring out the best nature in us, which will be in line with the Lord's will, so that we do good for others, we do good for ourselves also. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Very valuable insights and lessons you have given, so many. Very beautiful. Thank you so much. Mitraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. Monday we'll have Ram Katha. Next two chapters are Ram. Questions? Sir. Hey,